Wow. Wait till you see some of these videos and sound bites. This is what you need to know about today.
The president doing this is crucial. He is doing this to make the whole world safe.
Deep in the English countryside, there's a fleet of American warplanes that are going to bomb Iran every single day.
He's trying to manipulate oil markets right now. No direct negotiations, and there have been no indirect negotiations.
Is the president of the United States lying about negotiating with Iran? This is the Sanchez effect. Wow, let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want to welcome you to The Effect. As we begin this newscast, there is ample evidence out there that President Trump desperately wants out of his disastrous war with Iran. Mr. Trump has posted what he claims is an armistice, a deal with Iran. Here it is. Let me read it to you. I've got it right here. It says, I am pleased to report that the United States of America and the country of Iran have had, over the last 2 days, very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East. Based on the tenor and the tone of these in-depth, detailed, and constructive conversations, which will continue throughout the week, I have instructed the Department of War to postpone any and all military strikes against the Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure for a 5-day period. Remember, he was going to strike them tonight, Monday into Tuesday. Subject to the success of the ongoing meetings and discussions. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. So, can you believe this? That's really an important and key question here, considering the fact that Iranians have said they got no interest in negotiating with Mr. Trump. They don't trust Mr. Trump. So if the Iranians have agreed, it must be because they've got some incredible deal, right? They've been offered, like, damage reparations, removal of sanctions. And by the way, and then there's the question of Israel. If there's a deal, why isn't Israel mentioned? Do they stay in the fight, but the United States goes away? See, there's nothing in Mr. Trump's post about Israel. That's kind of bizarre, no? So, look, throughout last week, Mr. Trump made it sound like he's cutting Iran a great break by ending the war. But here's the problem with his assertion that he's cutting them a break. Iran has consistently said no end in sight, no ceasefire, no negotiations. We're not interested. Even the usually calm and composed Iranian professor Mohammad Mirandi has been making this point, and he just made it again. As a matter of fact, we just reached out to him to ask him, is there a deal? Are you guys, is Iran, as far as you know, negotiating with the U.S. or with Mr. Trump? Here's what he said.
By now, I think everyone across the world knows that Trump is not the most truthful person around. There have been no direct negotiations, and there have been no indirect negotiations. What has probably happened is that Trump recognized that he will be facing severe consequences. And I think as we approach that 48 hours that he had spoken of, he got cold feet. Now, that doesn't mean that this has come to an end. He may carry out attacks during the week. He may carry out attacks next week. Iran is prepared, and if there are any attacks on its critical infrastructure, the retaliation will be very brutal, to say the least. But I think he's trying to manipulate oil markets right now as well, because the prices have gone up a great deal, and he's brought them down a bit.
Wow. So, you know, Mr. Trump was going to attack sometime late tonight. Now, apparently, he's not. And this is the reason he's using to not do it. However, 30 minutes ago, Mr. Trump said that, no, yeah, we are negotiating. We're for sure. And not only are we negotiating, he's saying the Iranians called us to negotiate. Here, take a listen.
If this happens, and, you know, I can't guarantee it, but I think it's going to. My life is a deal. That's all I do is deals my whole life. I think this is something that's going to happen. And why wouldn't it happen? So tomorrow morning sometime, their time, we were expected to blow up their largest electric generating plants that cost over $10 billion to build. It's a very good one. There was no dearth of money. And one shot, it's gone. It collapses. Why would they want that? So they called. I didn't call. They called. They want to make a deal. And we are very willing to make a deal. It's got to be a good deal. And it's got to be no more wars, no more nuclear weapons. They're not going to have nuclear weapons anymore. They're agreeing to that. Any of that stuff, there's no deal.
So the Iranians say, no, it's not true. We haven't called them. We've had no interest in calling them throughout this entire, and they've been very consistent about this, by the way. They've been saying over and over again every time they're asked, which is every day, and they keep saying, no, we haven't called. We are not negotiating. We're not interested in negotiating because we don't trust them. Because every time we've tried to negotiate with Mr. Trump or his team members from Israel, they essentially bomb us. So Mr. Trump is saying that Iran's military is wiped out, by the way. Obviously, it's not. Just judging from the pictures coming out of Israel and other places, Defense Secretary Hegseth says the Strait of Hormuz is open, but it's obviously not. Mr. Trump says he's sending Marines, but he also says there's definitely not going to be boots on the ground. He said both things almost at the same time. He sets an ultimatum. Now he removes the ultimatum. And by the way, we're still really not sure what the real reason was for this war in the first place. And now we're told he's got a deal. So does he? Can you see why this is so confusing for people like me who are trying to cover it? And even Americans and people around the world who are seeing a, I don't know, maybe a bit of a credibility problem here. By the way, if Mr. Trump's intention is to just declare victory and walk away, I don't think that's going to work either. Because, see, he's the one who seems most interested in walking away. And in my book, that's called a forfeit. You know, like in sports, when you forfeit, you quit. When you quit in the middle of the game or in the middle of a match, that's also called losing. Losing. So Mr. Trump doesn't like that. And he's trying to work a way around it, right? So part of the problem he has right now is his disapproval numbers just over the weekend. They hit 60%. 60%. So he's having a really tough time trying to wriggle himself out of this very unpopular war. But you know where the war is equally unpopular? Maybe more so? Oh, my God, in Europe. They hate it. Look at what some of the polls are saying. And by the way, these polls I'm showing you, I think they're about 3 or 4 days old, maybe more. Europeans are roundly against the war. Polls in Spain, Italy, Germany, UK all reveal significant public opposition to what Israel and the United States have done to Iran. And that's why Prime Minister Starmer, for example, has come out and said the UK will not assist in this war. We have nothing to do with it, not involved. Well, apparently he's not telling the truth either. Surprised? You shouldn't be. Look at this. This is an exclusive report I'm about to show you. This is going to freak you out. It did me when I saw it. It unveils that despite what Starmer says, yes, the UK is effectively taking part in bombing Iran. Look at this video of this guy, this intrepid reporter, literally on a ladder unraveling Starmer's lie.
Deep in the English countryside, there's a fleet of American warplanes that are going to bomb Iran every single day.
When they see US soldiers on UK soil, kind of nonchalantly just ferrying 2,000-pound bombs around the place to go and drop them in the context of an illegal war, I think a lot of the British probably were quite shocked. There's a significant amount of heavy US bombers stationed here at RAF Fairford. There's several B-52s. Half of the US fleet of B-1s are also stationed here. But also to these 2,000-pound bombs that we can see on the runway, and knowing that within 6-8 hours, that could be dropped on a school in Iran, it could be dropped on a mosque.
Did you see that? No, we're not involved at all other than this. Those guys literally got on a ladder to find out the truth. They're called Declassified UK. I follow them. They're good. They do good work as journalists. By the way, if you look inside the polls that I just showed you in Europe, you will see that the anti-war sentiment is increasing. It's growing with each passing day. And yet, what does NATO say? Well, if the people want no war, Rutte, you can almost be guaranteed, is going to say the opposite, and here it is.
We have seen with North Korea, if we negotiate for too long, you might pass the moment where you can still get this thing done. And North Korea now has the nuclear capability. If Iran would have the nuclear capability, including together with the missile capability, it would be a direct threat, a existential threat to Israel, to the region, to Europe, to the stability in the world. So the president doing this is crucial. And I've seen the polling, but I really hope the American people will be with him because he is doing this to make the whole world safer.
This guy reminds me of a used car salesman. You know, just give him an extra 10 bucks and he'll say whatever you want. You know, the hypocrisy of this guy, Mark Rutte, of NATO, of the EU, of the European governments in London, Paris, and Berlin, it says, no, it screams double standard. You know, think about it. Military aggression, bombings, wars, perfectly fine as long as they're their wars. Their bombings and their aggression. NATO bombed Belgrade. They bombed Iraq. They bombed Syria. They bombed Afghanistan. But if Iran, if China, if Russia does anything remotely aggressive, or any country that's not a part of NATO does it, then, oh, my God, they go ballistic. Literally, they go ballistic. And they do it more often than not at the expense of their own people. This is what the Europeans are almost like famous for these days. Their actions, these wars and everything else they do, it causes high inflation, high taxes, high crime rates, out of control immigration. And the people who live in Europe, the people who have to put up with this crap and these policies, they get screwed time and time again. Look, right now, I'll give you an example. Europeans are in worse condition than most countries when it comes to energy because of the Strait of Hormuz situation. What's ironic, it's almost cruel, is that they could have had plentiful and inexpensive oil and gas directly pumped into them, practically into their homes from Russia. But their leaders said, no, we can't have that from Russia. That's crazy. It's like taking out a gun and just shooting yourself right in the foot on purpose. By the way, notwithstanding its nonsensical and almost maniacal bombing of Iran, the United States and the Trump administration get props here because at least they have more of a business-like approach when it comes to Russia, for example. Why? Well, this one's kind of simple. I think Trump recognizes the vastness of Russia's resources as a potential trading partner. Look, Russia, whether you like them or not, is the largest country on Earth. Its richness is undeniable. The resources, timber, more than any country on Earth by far. Rare earth minerals, number two, only behind China. Natural gas, Russia's number one anywhere in the world. Oil, Russia's number three, the third largest producer of oil in the world, behind only what, Saudi Arabia and the United States, right? Uranium, there Russia ranks fourth in reserves. So, you see the opportunity? Russia's resources could be used to improve the lives of Europeans. Even President Trump realizes this and did so last week when he removed the sanctions on Russian oil so that countries around the world could have access to it in desperation. But European leaders, no, they'd rather suffer. No, they'd rather have their own people suffer. They don't suffer. They'd rather have their own people suffer than do a deal with Russia. That's crazy. And it's not just European governments that are doing this. European businesses have also become captive to this irrationality, because that's what it is. Some would call it stupidity. For example, when the war broke out in Ukraine, this is in 2022, companies from all over the world that have been doing business in Russia were pressured, pull out, cease operations right away. Chinese companies and other Asian-based companies said, no, we're not. In fact, we're going to double down. And that's what they did. They got more companies now. They do more business with Russia. U.S. companies, like, let's say, PepsiCo, they found kind of like a middle ground. look at this huge PepsiCo facility that's in Russia that I found. I didn't know about this. Did you know that? It was in Russia still, and they're here. And instead of abandoning their operation, the Russian facility, the 19,000 employees, they didn't walk away. Yeah, they cut back. So it maintained control of the 20 or so plants in Russia, continued paying employees, continued producing essential consumables like dairy products for children and babies. Yeah, it stopped bottling the brand names like Pepsi, 7-Up, and Mountain Dew, but they didn't stop the operation. They didn't abandon the operation. It found a way to protect their employees. It found a way to protect their resources and their shareholders. Now I want to give you a comparison. Let's look at a European example. Let's take the case of a Danish company. It's called Rockwool. It makes insulation products. It operates in the United States, by the way, as well as in Russia. Has no history, though, of ever challenging or questioning wars or aggression of any type or part by NATO or the United States. In other words, when NATO or the United States do it, they don't do anything. No sanctions, nothing, right? In fact, right now, this is interesting. I found out Rockwool is actually building a brand new, huge facility in the state of Washington in the U.S., just as the United States is bombing Iran. No complaints there. Here's the case study of Rockwool that I want to show you. So they've got factories, workers, supply chains in Russia. It's always been a very successful operation. But when the war in Ukraine began, it was pressured, like many companies, to pull out. Fine. So did they sell the operation in Russia? No. Did it come up with something in the middle like PepsiCo did? No. It chose instead passive ownership. What does that mean? It means it still took the profits from the operation, but it really chose to have nothing to do with the operation. No more spare parts, no expertise, no equipment. It essentially abandoned direct management of the company. It abandoned 1,200 employees, abandoned 4 factories, and just kind of let the business wither. So what happened? Locals in Russia, with a kind of a capitalistic fervor that used to exist in the West, in places like the UK and Denmark, they stepped in and they kept the plant running. It's kind of like a movie what they did. And they did so using Russian materials and Russian workers and selling the insulation produced there to Russian consumers. What did Rockwool do? Well, according to reports, they pocketed a lot of the profits to the tune of about $450 million. After all, they still own the company. Again, it could have sold, it could have divested, but instead, it let the company and the operations go downhill until eventually revenues fell, profitability declined, production slid. Oh, it gets better. Because a couple months ago, even though Western media reports it as a seizure, the Russian government stepped in to try and save the enterprise by appointing a temporary management team, essentially telling Rockwool, look, if you're not going to run this operation, this business, then step aside and let somebody else do it. Rockwool said no. So now a group of Russian investors have stepped in, and they're offering to buy the business outright. They don't want to seize it. They don't want to nationalize it. They want to buy it. And have made an offer, not for what it used to be worth in 2022, but rather what it's worth now. And they're hoping Rockwool will at least talk to them, right? No. They're doing nothing. Not interested in talking to Russians. Again, see the pattern? So look, here's the point of all of this. Whether it's oil from Russia, trade deals with China, or the case of this Danish insulation company in Denmark, Europe's decisions are very often these days both irrational and costly and corrupt. Listen to what this insider in the EU has to say.
Within the European Union, there, to me, it's a very corrupt organization. At the beginning, I loved the idea of the European Union like it was like 25 or 30 years ago, but it became very corrupt and that interferes a lot with our farmers, the way our food is, where the food is born, you know? So that's something that I'm really passionate about.
This is a pattern that I've seen developing. So here's the obvious question. If you're a European company like Rockwool, for example, and you can legally sell and recover your capital for your shareholders, why wouldn't you do that? And if you instead take an enormous loss of about whatever they've been reporting, something like $500 million, aren't you daring, provoking, or even encouraging the Russian government to nationalize your operation so you can then complain about it? Why not just sell? Here's the most important question. Who are you really hurting by not selling? You're not hurting Moscow. Russian economy is doing just fine. Those that are paying the price for what you're doing are the people of Europe. People who have pension funds, retirement accounts, ordinary Europeans who own shares, 401k accounts. See, this is this pattern that cuts across the board with Europe these days. They're too proud, too spiteful, I don't know, maybe too stupid. Just pick up the phone and negotiate, right? Instead, they'd rather stew. Macron in France, he won't pick up the phone and call Putin. Rutte at NATO, he won't pick up the phone and call Lavrov. The CEO of this company, Rockwool, he won't pick up the phone and call Russian investors. And who loses? And who continues to lose? Europeans. Not these elites, but the people who live in Europe. And as I've noticed in this pattern, and as I've continued to watch it develop, and the more I looked at what's happening right now in Europe, I decided that I wanted to talk to somebody who's inside, right? Somebody who might be able to explain this mentality to me. Why are the Europeans doing this? So we reached out to a member of the European Union Parliament. So here now, my interview, my conversation with Lubos Blaha. And we are joined now by a member of the European Parliament. He is very much respected and, by the way, outspoken at the same time, not afraid to speak his mind, which is why we had him on the air. I've been talking about this for the longest time. I want to talk to somebody in Europe who can make me who can help me understand or can explain to us rationally the craziness that we seem to see that is coming out of Europe these days. So here we are, joined by a member of Parliament, Lubos Blaha, who's good enough to talk to us. Mr. Blaha, thank you so much for joining us, sir. That's really nice of you to give us time.
Thank you very much for your invitation. I'm really happy that I can be in your television. And many greetings from Brussels. Really, as you said, the city of craziness.
Well, the problem that I see with the decisions that are coming out of Brussels is they are constantly making decisions that may be good for bankers, they may be good for war profiteers, they may be good for each other, they may be good for politicians, they may be good for a lot of reasons, but you know who they're not good for? The people of Europe. For the people of Europe, life keeps getting more expensive, they keep having more immigrants from wars that they had nothing to do with. So it seems like there are decisions in Europe are being made at the expense of the people of Europe. Am I crazy?
Well, you are absolutely true. And I think what you are saying, this is a definition of neoliberal project. And yes, European Union was, has been the neoliberal project for many decades, many years, but still it was not the insane project. Now it's becoming insane project because the only purpose of this European Union now is kind of war, is a war machine. It's like hatred against Russian Federation, hatred against China, hatred against everybody who has not the progressive ideas and progressive values and LGBTI, you know, activism. So this is insane project. There is no common sense anymore here in the European Union. And we are committing suicide. We are committing economic suicide. This is the most horrible thing. So I can understand that for decades, European Union and America was the continent of neoliberal, you know, experiments. But now it's even worse. It's not about neoliberalism now. It's about insanity. It's about the war. It's about the hatred and Russophobia. And this is very dangerous for my continent. And the working class people will suffer the most, as you said.
Yeah, as a matter, I was just looking at the numbers. Let me look at my notes, because I was just looking at my notes. It says that this Iran war, specifically for the people of Europe who are going to be hit the worst, their energy costs could go up anywhere between 20%. And if this continues and goes on for, let's say, another several months, it could go all the way up to 40%. That's crazy, because it's already expensive to buy fuel in Europe, isn't it?
This is the worst possible scenario which could happen. You know, after really insane sanctions against Russia, which brought the really, really horrible prices of energy sources to German industry, to European industry. And this was the cause why the European industry is now decreasing and is in big troubles and big problems. After this, now we have this crisis in the Middle East. Now we have this American and Israeli war of aggression. And now European Union is in the situation that in the economic crisis, we have the new big problem that our energy sources will be even more expensive. And then we will not have a chance to be competitive in the global economy. This is really the worst situation as could happen to European Union, but it's their mistake, because, you know, what we need for our economy is diversification of our energy sources.
Yes.
We had a long period, we had a good relations with Russian Federation. Yes, of course, there is a conflict in Ukraine, but it was absolutely suicidal for European Union to give the sanctions or to you know, impose the sanctions against Russia, because it's not about Russia. Russia is all right. Russia can export their oil to China, to India, whatever country you can imagine. But the European Union now is totally isolated. We don't have the oil and gas from Russia. We don't have the oil and gas from the Middle East. We can have only from the Americans, but now American administration can blackmail us, can do whatever they want with us. So I think that the European Union now is in the position of servant of the United States because of this structural mistake. So the only chance for us is to improve the relations with Russia and to restart the import from Russia, I mean the energy sources. But the otherwise is doing, they are doing the opposite. They are doing just the opposite, and they are just, continuing in their aggression and hatred against Russia. This is absolutely ridiculous.
It's crazy, because it's almost like you've screwed yourself in this case. I mean, here, suppose you don't like Russia. Suppose you think Putin's ugly or Lavrov's boring or whatever, or you just don't like Russians because you think they smell bad. I don't care. Whatever the case may be, business is business. If you don't like the guy who's servicing your or cleaning your trucks and you have a trucking business, you don't get rid of him because you don't like the guy's wife. You do business based on the guy who gives you the best offering. Here's Russia, whether you like him or not, saying we will put a direct pipeline and send efficient, low-cost oil to the people of your country so that they can heat their homes, and we're going to be providing that for you. And you say, no, no, no. Europe says, we don't want that. We'd rather pay twice as much from someplace else. Give it cheap to the Chinese. They give it to them. We don't want it. My God, Lubos, that's crazy. That's crazy.
You are absolutely true. And imagine that Slovakia, my home country, is in the worst situation, because this pipeline from Russia, Druzhba is its name, was in our territory. So we had a lot of money from transit of this oil and all this gas to the Western Europe. And also we had these cheap energy sources, so it was good for our industry. Now we have a big problem, and this big problem is caused by President Zelensky of Ukraine, because he is starting to using these pipelines against Slovakia and Hungary, because we, two member states of European Union, are against this war against Russia. From the reasons, as you said, it's not because of the love for the Russians. Okay, Slovaks like Russians, but this is about common sense. This is about pragmatism. This is about economy, that we need cheap energy sources. And the same is that we need also good relations with China, because we need to export our commodities to China. So we cannot just teach them about human rights. We need them as a market. The same for the Russians. I cannot understand this Brussels circus, which they are just talking about human rights, LGBTI rights, about everything, but not about the economic interest. And this is the main mistake, because the rulers of the European Union now are not the, you know, personalities like before, like Willy Brandt or maybe Konrad Adenauer, whoever. Okay, I'm leftist, so I like more Willy Brandt. But still, also the right-wing politicians in European Union before were like people with common sense. They were talking about economy and about the structural things. No, these are just the activists. Just the NGO activists who are like blaming Russia for everything, blaming China for everything, talking about human rights. And in the end, European Union will be, you know, bankrupted. And this will be the, you know, result of their absolutely stupid behavior. I'm very sorry, but this is the case in Slovakia, in European Union. And Slovakia is too small to change it.
Maybe you can help me understand this bizarre love affair with Volodymyr Zelensky. They put him on the silver platter, like this guy is the Pope or something, or Mother Teresa, and everything he says and does is good. Let me give you an example. So, you know, you guys have given Zelensky hundreds of billions of dollars. I mean, I think it's up to $500 or $600 billion if you combine the United States contribution with the European contribution, whatever it is. It's a crazy number. It's more money that was spent to rebuild Europe after World War II. By far. So, okay. So now Orban comes along, the prime minister of Hungary, interesting guy, and he says, you know what? I'm tired of this. You guys now want to give him another $90 billion with the situation we have here? Our people are going hungry. People can't pay their bills, and you want to give this guy $90 billion. So he says, no, listen to what Zelensky says about Orban. Play this for us, guys.
We hope that one individual in the European Union won't block the $90 billion or the first tranche of $90 billion. Otherwise, we'll give that person's address to our armed forces, to our guys. Let them call him and speak to him in their own language.
So here's Zelensky saying, we hope he won't block the $90 billion, or we will give the address of this person to our armed forces, and they will call him and talk to him. And by the way, that's after he called him fat and a lot of other things. That's not the proper behavior of a leader, especially a guy who's getting his ass kicked in a war. Somebody in the European Parliament should stand up and say, we will not condone that kind of language, and why are you talking that way about one of our members? Is anybody doing that?
Yes, you are absolutely true. It was shocking and disgusting what President Zelensky said about Mr. Orban. And it's even worse because Zelensky even said, or some Ukrainians even said, threatened Mr. Orban's family. So this is even worse because... Wow. But you can do whatever you want if you are Ukrainian now. Ukraine is like, you know, holy grail, like holy sacred place. You cannot say anything bad about Ukraine. You cannot say anything bad about Zelensky. But the truth is that he's a comedian. He's a showman. He is not like a political personality. He's just, you know, circus clown. And this clown is very dangerous because, you know, he's trying to make a war against Russia and to take Europe to this war. And this is very dangerous because Russia is a nuclear state. You cannot just risk the nuclear war only because Ukraine. You cannot just do that. This is absolutely irrational. And you can you don't need to be the defender of Russia, but you need to understand Russians' positions. And the Russians' positions are that the Western countries and the NATO was expanding towards Russian borders. So they needed to react, and they were trying to defend their national security. This is the case. Not like in Iran when America is, you know, I don't know, thousands of miles away. Ayatollahs from Iran are not on the Mexican border. But yes, the West was on the border of Russia in Ukraine. So this is a totally different case. And our European reaction should have been, let's negotiate. Let's try to find some peace. Yeah. But not. We were sending the weapons. And after sending all the weapons we had, after sending all the money we had, then President Zelensky will say, okay, we are going to send an army against Orban, and we are going to send an army against Orban's family, and we are going to hate Mr. Fico, is the Prime Minister of Slovak Republic, because they want to have a peace in Ukraine. This is ridiculous. And Zelensky needs this war, because otherwise he would be out of the politics. Nobody wants him. He is just there as a dictator without any elections, because he wants to postpone this war forever. And this is very dangerous for Ukrainians themselves. I'm very sorry for them, because they are dying. Not the Americans, not the Europeans. Ukrainians are dying in so useless war. So that's why we need to make negotiations with Russia and to normalize our relations. It's good for Europe, not for Russia, for Europe.
In fact, I think, listen, the provocateurs here are the Europeans. Russia's not in a war with Ukraine. Russia's in a war with Europe. The Ukrainians aren't the ones who are guiding those missiles. The Ukrainians don't have satellites. The Ukrainians don't have the intel that MI6 and others have. Russia is in a war with Europe, and thank God for the Europeans that the Russians have not allowed themselves to go as far as to attack Europe, although one wonders at what point they'll be able to show less restraint, because it's pretty obvious what you just said, and most people understand this who know this. The Europeans are just, pardon me, the Ukrainians are proxies. They're fodders in this war, I hate to say.
Absolutely. It's like this. You are saying the absolute truth. Everybody sees that. That this war in Ukraine is not the war between Russia and Ukraine. It's the war of the collective West against Russia.
Yeah.
For many years, it was especially the Biden's war, the Americans' war. Now, the new American president is the only benefit of him, that he, you know, changed his position. And now it's about the Western European war against Russia. Well, but still, Americans are helping Ukrainians, and still it's not good from the American side at all. But still, Europeans are doing the worst possible scenario as it can happen, because, you know, Russian, in their entire history, were defending themselves from the attack from the West.
Yes.
It was Napoleon, it was Hitler, then it was Cold War. Always it was some potential attack from the West. And suddenly somebody expect that the Russian will be like, you know, waiting and looking at the Western armies coming to their borders.
Yes.
So they did it. They didn't. They are not stupid. You know, they have a common sense. They are very clever people. And so they started with this not war of aggression. It's a defensive reaction. And now in this situation, we could have this response like, okay, we now understood. Now we made mistakes. Let's make fast peace. No, we are waging forever war. And now we are in such bad economic situation. And such, you know, military budgets, that it's absolutely unsustainable. Absolutely unsustainable. I cannot see any future for Europe. And this is really bad. And I will tell you one more reason why these Europeans, these Western Europeans, not Slovaks, not the ordinary people from Slovakia or Hungary, but these Western Europeans and the leaders of Western Europe, they are hate Putin and Russians. Also because of ideological reasons. It's not only about the geopolitics. Because they hate him because he's traditional. He is, you know, he's so-called conservative, that he wants to have traditional family. He doesn't follow this LGBTI ideology. Mm-hmm. He doesn't follow, you know, bullshits about gender and about minorities and migration and so on. So he is normal, I would say. Maybe not conservative, normal. Normal, traditional politician.
Yeah.
And this activists, these, you know, fanatics in the Brussels, for them it's like nightmare. Everybody must be progressive, and Putin was the symbol of this, refusal of this progressivism. So they hate him so much because of this. This is the main reason, or this is one of the reasons. It's not about the geopolitics.
By the way, I got to tell you, when I met with Putin not long ago, I didn't find him to be a strident, right-wing kind of guy. I mean, he comes across as a very normal guy. Yeah, probably like you and me, probably, you know, family guy, and maybe has some general religious Christian conservative principles, but not to the point where he's hitting people over the head with them or anything like that. And you don't see that in Russia. There's gay people in Russia. There's trans people in Russia. There's everything in Russia. So, I mean, no, that when you come to Russia, you find out that they don't promote it in the schools. They don't have commercials on TV saying you have to be like this, but you're free to be whatever the hell you want to be in Russia.
Definitely. The same is in Slovakia. You know, we are not the haters. We don't have anything against these minorities, but we are against this LGBTI ideology, like pushing this in every ad, in every morning, every evening.
You mean like gay Pride Month? Like in America, your children once a year, 1 month out of the 12, have to celebrate gay pride. And you're wondering, nothing against gay pride. I'm happy that people feel pride for being gay. That's perfectly fine. But in America, we have this the Hispanic Heritage Month. I'm Hispanic. I don't need 1 month. I need you to be nice to me all year long. Black History Month, Gay Pride Month. Like, we're separating ourselves rather than coming together.
It's too much for us. You know, in Slovakia, for example, we are not a rich country. We have many people who are, you know, especially the working class people are very poor or are poor. And we need to solve these social issues. We need to solve the normal life for the people. I don't understand why the priority for the politics should be this LGBTI ideology and this gender and transsexuals. You know, again, I am saying that this is not about hatred. Just we have different priorities.
Their choice.
Yeah, the Russia is the same. It's a traditional society. That doesn't mean that they hate or they lynch the people who have different sexual orientation. No, they are a total modern country. And when you were saying about Putin, Putin was a very moderate politician and still is in the Russian political system. He was, I think, when he started his career, he was a so-called Zapadnik. He was a westernizer. He wanted to be like modern West, but without this progressive thinking. But like to have good relations, to have normal trade, normal relations. No, they continued, I mean the West, they continued with their imperialism, with their jihad against Russia. And this is most dangerous. Remember Serbia and Kosovo, remember the bombing of Yugoslavia. This was sometimes like the alarm clock for Putin, and I think it started to change at that time.
You know what it is too? It's bad business. And it's stupid to be a bad business person. It's stupid to put your ideology above the bottom line. It's stupid to impose sanctions to hurt your adversaries and then end up hurting yourself more than your adversaries, as has been the case in the case of Russia. I'm looking at these cases, for example, in Russia now. I talked about it earlier on in my lead, where at the start of the war, certain companies all over the world were told, you can't do business with Russia. Now, the Chinese said, go to hell. We're gonna do business with whoever we're gonna do business with, and we're gonna keep our businesses in Russia. In fact, we're gonna grow them. American companies like PepsiCo said, all right, we'll stop selling our products, but we're not going to leave. We're going to keep our thousands of employees that are there. We're going to keep putting money into the plant. But the European companies that I looked at, one of them in particular, I think named Rockwool or something, they have like 1,200 employees in Russia. They abandoned the plant, stopped putting money into it, and now they're mad that apparently the Russian government wants to assign it to some other people to run it. Well, you can't have your cake and eat it too. And by the way, when you do stuff like this, you're basically hurting your own bottom line. That means you're hurting your shareholders. There are people in these companies, whether it's Rockwool or any other European company, who now will not be able to get their pensions or they'll lose their 401ks, all because some guys want to hurt Russia. Again, that goes back to what you and I have been talking about. It's not just bad government, it's bad business.
Exactly as you are saying, I have one more example of this. You probably know this automotive corporation Volkswagen from Germany.
Yeah.
This corporation has a big problems now, a big economic problems because of the competition from Chinese, cars, and also because of this huge expensive energy sources. because our sanctions against Russia, congratulations, we killed our automotive industry. But still, this corporation, there was a case in Slovakia. The one worker, 20 years working for this corporation in Slovakia, was, you know, fired in an hour because he refused to respect that this company, you know, gave the rainbow flag in front of this of their sites, because he said that, oh, he is not progressive, he doesn't like this LGBT ideology, so he take it back. He was fired in an hour, and this was a big case, you know. Volkswagen, in this huge economic problems, doesn't try to solve these problems, doesn't try to make some pragmatic economic solutions or some decisions. No, he's making he's waging the cultural war against Slovaks, against employees, against workers. This is Volkswagen today, and this is the illustration of stupidity and insanity of Europe, because even the capitalists are stopping to be capitalists. They are ideologues.
Yes.
This is crazy.
I couldn't agree with you more. Whether it's Rockwool or Volkswagen or whoever you name, it almost seems like instead of running the company as a board and a CEO and making decisions for the benefit of the shareholders of the company, they're making decisions for Kalakaias or whatever the hell her name is, or van der Leyen or Mark Rutte. Or it's like, no, we don't need to please the people who we serve. We're going to please these guys over here. I mean, how does that happen? Go ahead.
When you are talking about Kaja Kallas, the funny thing is that she is the former Estonian prime minister, and her husband has a beautiful business with Russia. After the conflict in Ukraine started, I think 2 years he made a big business and benefits and profits from Russia. But Kaja Kallas are saying all the European member states, you cannot have any contact with the Russians. And her own husband was one of the most influential businessmen with Russia. So this is this hypocrisy. They are hypocritical. They are not like moral personalities. They are just insane and hypocritical.
Let's close with this. Let's try and see what the future could bring, because the numbers are bad, and I've also seen the approval ratings. I think Mr. Starmer's approval ratings somewhere between 12 and 16. Mr. Macron's somewhere around between 17 and 19. Mr. Merz is down under 30, and he used to be up to 40 because he hasn't been there that long. I could go on and on. These guys are not liked by their people. Their people, I mean, going by those numbers, it looks like they hate them. So how do these people continue to control an entire continent and all of these countries when their economies are going to hell, the living conditions are bad, the people are dissatisfied, and their approval numbers are in the ground? Where's the uprising? Where's the people like you who can foment some kind of, I don't want them hurt. I'm sure they're good people if you talk to them. But how do we go to another generation of leaders in Europe instead of these bozos?
You are very true that there is a big cleavage in the European Union now. You can see it in every member state, that on one side you have this, I would say anti-globalist, or I would say patriots, or the common sense people who refuse this, these LGBTI progressive narratives. And on the other side, you have these mainstream politicians with their progressive doctrine. You know, the problem is that now they understood that the politics is changing, the societies are changing, the people don't want their politics. So they are trying to change and recreate the European space and the European Union to a war machine. So war machine doesn't need democracy. War machine doesn't need liberty. So they will continue in this, and they will be attacking the liberty, attacking the freedoms of speech, attacking all the oppositions, like saying
that's
that
why
they
you
are
have, by the way, that's why you have an immigration problem, is because of those stupid wars. Those people who come to Europe would have been very happy to stay in their own damn countries if you hadn't gone there and destroyed their countries.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely true. But now you have the situation also in the United States, and I'm very, very sorry for this, because waging the wars in Iran, in Venezuela, and now trying to, you know, to kill the Cubans and all the people in the world. I think in the end it will be absolutely self-suicidal for America. But it's your case, it's your affair. I'm trying to respect all the countries, but it would be nice if Americans respect the other countries as well. So I hope that the future will be about peace, but I am very afraid that all these, you know, all these scenarios are coming to one thing. There can be a big war, there can be escalation, and I hope that we can avoid it. But the only chance is to stop this Russophobia, stop this militarization, stop this war thinking and war mongering, and trying to, you know, unite all the people of the peace from the right-wing parties, from the left-wing parties. I don't care. Everybody who wants to have peace and common sense should be united.
Just do what is good for your people. Do what is good for your people. That's it. Nothing else. Put that on the wall when you walk into your office. What can I do today to make better the life of the people of Slovakia? That's my job. That's why God put me in this world, to help the people of Slovakia. That's what you should say. For me, it's what can I do as a journalist to help people better understand the world? If I was the American president, what can I do today for the people of the United States? Not Israel, the United States. If I'm the guy in Russia, I want to be the guy who takes care of the people of Russia. If we just get back to this thinking, we'll be fine. But Europe is a horrible example of that. It seems like everything they do is the opposite. It's so weird. I mean, you're a brave guy. You're courageous. You're one of the few who's standing up and saying, you people are crazy. We need to get back to taking care of our own people and stop worrying about everything else that's going on out there. Stop hating on Russia and start worrying about your own damn people. Stop wanting to join wars in the Middle East and start worrying about your own damn people. I mean, this is why I'm impressed with you. I'm impressed with Mr. Fico, who I think is a guy who is making a difference in Europe as well. As a matter of fact, pass along our hello to him as well, and let him know that I'll be coming soon to do an interview with him. I'm looking forward to sitting down and talking to him. I think it would make it an interesting conversation.
Thank you very much. He'll be in Moscow on May. When it will be the anniversary of the victory over fascism. So maybe you will have the opportunity to make the conversation with Mr. Fico. He's a really great guy.
I'm going to have our people start making the phone calls now, because I've been looking forward to talking to him. So, Lubos, you're really a good man, and I know you're passionate, like me, about just common sense things, you know. I don't hate anybody, and I don't think you do either. And I think it's not about disliking people. It's about bringing people together through common sense initiatives that help the people of our countries, no matter where we live. And we're all the same. It doesn't matter what your skin color is or what your nationality is or anything else for that matter. We're all God's
people.
Definitely.
I'm very happy to hear something like this from American citizens, because this is very important. America and Europe must awake and rise maybe against these war mongers. This is our only chance. We in Slovakia probably cannot change this, but you Americans, you can.
Thank you, my friend. It's a delight talking to you. God bless, and we'll see you again soon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Have a nice night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty. That's really a good interview, because you know what makes a good interview? When you feel like you're having a conversation with a friend, and not just any friend, but someone who you share ideas with and you think is smart. A smart conversation with the friend is what I think is really good television. And that's what we try to do here. Good television. That's why so many tens of millions of you are suddenly watching us. And we're so grateful that you're there. Continue to do so. Let us know what you think. Let us know what we're doing wrong. If you think I'm, as I always say, full of crap, let me know. You could find me, by the way, on BitChute. We're there now. We think that's a really good platform. And we're going to be paying more attention to our work there, as well as Spotify, which is another place where we've been growing. Who knew? I didn't even know we were there. But suddenly we're getting a lot of comments from people on Spotify, and we're happy that you're there. Obviously, we've been on X for quite some time, and we've really gotten pretty big there. And on YouTube, wow, big numbers lately. So look, no matter where you find us, no matter where you have conversations with us, Please continue to engage. We're so glad you're there. And most of all, as I always like to say for all of us here on the Sanchez Effect, thank you so much for letting us into your homes.